reappearance of the 12th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, false messiahs will start to pop up left and right, and they will claim to be able to bring justice and peace to humanity. But just as any kind of creature or follower of falsehood, if one pays close enough attention, the signs of falsehood are very apparent in these individuals who will claim to be false messiahs. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Mahdi, ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
Visiting the image of Imam al-Mahdi in the words of Hujjatul Islam, Fatimi Nia.
اگر خواستی جمال ببینی باید پاکیزه بشی. جمال دیدنم به این نیست برید ببینی. ممکن امام زمان سلام الله علیه از تو راضی شود در تو تصرف کنه خودت هم متوجه نشی چیکار داری تو.
If you wish to have the privilege to see the image of Imam al-Mahdi, you have to be purified. To see his face does not mean to go somewhere and visit him. Some people are doing business, abusing some other people's beliefs and telling them that they can see Imam al-Mahdi. This is not something ordinary, and you can't visit his great personality by just reading some supplications. If Imam al-Mahdi decides to let you see him, he will make it happen. He is so generous, and we know this fact. Please pay attention to this fact, that it does not make any difference for the infallible Imams to be either present or in occultation. They would make it happen anyway.
دیدن جمال ولو در مرتبه ضعیف ضعیفش این که حضرت راضی بشن دستت بگیرن. بله، هر شیعه باید یک نخی ازش به امام زمانش برسه.
Visiting the image and feeling the existence of Ahlul Bayt could take place in a lower level. If something happens for us, they will definitely take our hand in hardships. It is impossible that the progeny of Prophet Muhammad will not help us unless one of us has committed murder, has been cursed by his or her parents, or has quit saying his prayer. Now on this occasion, I'm going to say some prayers. As the progeny of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his progeny, have said, we will be happy in their happiness, and we will get sad in their sorrow. Now, my dear brothers and sisters, listen to these prayers. O God, please bless us all. My dear brothers and sisters, we will have the month of Ramadan ahead of us soon, and it is really important to be blessed before this month. O God, we hope that Imam al-Mahdi is satisfied with us.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Dialogue. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
the limelight.
UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer told to be as robust as Canada with the US President as the UK stages last-ditch talks to strike a trade deal. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world press and news agencies to shed more light on the issue. Please stay with us. Guardian Daily writes, amid heightened fears that the US president could trigger a global trade war with devastating effects on the UK economy, senior UK and EU diplomats said on Saturday night, on March 29th, Keir Starmer should fight back strongly against Donald Trump if he imposes punitive tariffs on British exports. British government officials in London and Washington are working frantically these days to try to persuade Trump not to slap duties on more key UK industries on what he is calling Liberation Day on Wednesday, April 2nd. The US president has already announced plans for 25% levies on imports of cars, steel, and aluminum to the US. One vital battleground now is over Washington's threat to impose blanket reciprocal 25% tariffs on all countries that impose value-added tax on U.S. exports. These countries include the U.K. and EU nations. The United States does not impose VAT on its imports. The Office for Budget Responsibility, OBR, warned recently that the 20% increase in tariffs between the United States and the rest of the world would cut U.K. growth by 1% and entirely eliminate £9.9 billion of fiscal headroom that the Chancellor of Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, restored in the public finances by a painful program of welfare and other cuts in her spring statement recently. Starmer appears to be waiting to judge how to react based on the level of any tariffs imposed on the UK. He is said by government officials to be ready to act in the national interest if Trump does hit the UK hard. But his team also says that he will be pragmatic if need to, suggesting he may not retaliate immediately in the hope of talking Trump around over time and with the aim of creating the conditions for signing a wider UK-US trade deal. Diplomats now say Starmer, who has refused to issue a word of criticism of Trump since his return to the White House, must be prepared to retaliate or run the risk that the U.S. president simply deploys the same tactic again and again, knowing his opponent will not fight back. Speaking to The Observer, the former UK ambassador to Washington, Kim Darroch, said Starmer should learn from the experience over recent days of the Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney, who appears to have softened Trump's tariff threat by warning of a strong Canadian retaliation and making clear his displeasure at the US president over his threats towards his country's sovereignty, an approach that has lifted his Liberal Party sustainability in the polls. Carney said it is clear that the United States is no longer a reliable partner. Lord Darroch said it's understandable that, faced with deeply damaging U.S. tariffs on British cars, steel and aluminum, the government should think about concessions like reducing digital tax. But they need to be wary of giving Trump wins. Tariffs are his all-purpose forcing mechanism, and he will use them again and again if he sees them working. And they should note the dramatic turnaround in Canadian politics, where on the back of a robust and defiant response to U.S. tariff threats, Mark Carney's Liberals have gone from 14 points behind the Canadian Conservative Party at the end of January to 8 points ahead last week. It is expected that Trump may impose less punitive tariffs on the UK than on member states of the EU, which he believes have taken an anti-US approach on trade over decades. João Valdo Almeida, former EU ambassador to the US and the UK, said he did not expect the UK to retaliate in the way the EU was bound to, but he said it was important that Starmer hit back in some way by criticizing the way the US president used tariffs as a tool of policy. Valdo Almeida said he, Starmer, should at least condemn the tariffs as they are bad for everyone. In her spring statement recently, Reeves, who is set to oppose retaliating to US tariffs, said the global economy had become more uncertain, but at no point mentioned that it was Trump who had fueled the uncertainty and created the conditions in which a global trade war is now entirely possible. Carney, by contrast, has taken on Trump, telling him on Wednesday, March 26, that Canada would retaliate against the United States with tariffs of its own, potentially escalating a damaging trade conflict between the neighboring countries. An opinion poll for The Observer shows that after the spring statement, just 11% of UK voters expect the economy to improve over the next 12 months, with 23% saying it will stay the same and 61% that it will get worse. About 17% said they expected their finances to get better, 38% that they would stay the same, and 41% that they would get worse. Voters in this country rate with UK economy relatively poorly compared with large economic nations, particularly China. The UK economy is rated better than China's by just 9% of UK voters, with 10% saying it is about the same and 43% saying it is worse. Only 15% say the UK economy is better than that of the United States, with 16% saying it is about the same and 36% saying it is worse. Meanwhile, The Independent reports Keir Starmer has been warned against appeasing Donald Trump as he considers reducing a major tax for U.S. tech companies while cutting disability benefits and public sector jobs. His chancellor, Rachel Reeves, confirmed on Sunday, March 23rd, that there were ongoing discussions about the UK's £1 billion a year digital services tax that affects companies including Meta and Amazon. She expressed optimism that Trump's 25% tariffs on British steel could be removed in any deal, but did not deny there could be changes to the digital services tax, which the United States has lobbied against. She said, "You've got to get the balance right." While any changes didn't take place in her recent spring statement, the Liberal Democrats warned Labour was in danger of losing its moral compass, and it would be tantamount to robbing disabled people to appease Elon Musk and Trump. Labour MPs are already on the brink of rebellion over £5 billion of welfare cuts to disability benefits, and trade unions are concerned about £2 billion of Whitehall cuts, leading to about 1,000 civil service job losses, plus the risk of redundancies in arm's length bodies and local governments. The Labour MP and former Shadow Cabinet Minister Rachel Maskell said, with the Chancellor saying that she's still looking at the digital services tax, then I would be concerned if relief was granted in what would be seen as a dash to let the United States tech companies off the hook, while at the same time as making disabled people pay for their revenue loss, with their lifelines being cut. She said, "I recognize that the Chancellor as to rebuild the economy, but who pays for these matters, and it must never be the poorest in our society, which will be the outcome should the Department for Work and Pensions proposals go through. Clive Lewis, the Labour MP and another former shadow cabinet minister, said this was entirely predictable given how desperate the government is to appease the Trump administration and tech oligarchs around it, adding, "This is extractive politics at its worst, and exactly the kind of deal the MAGA Make America Great Again movement wants. Rather than move closer to Europe and stand together, we are allowing ourselves to be ripped off." He said it was an object surrender even before the government chooses tax cuts for big U.S. tech and austerity for the most vulnerable, adding, "Frankly, it's unacceptable."
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The Gaza Strip is facing a severe humanitarian crisis as Israeli blockade, now exceeding a month, continues to prevent the entry of essential aid, including food, fuel, and medical supplies.
The Gaza Strip is going through the most dire circumstances ever. The famine is back again, even more severely, as 25 bakeries stop completely. This current crisis is unprecedented, as this is the longest time span of closure of the Gazan crossings by the Israeli regime. This in turn has caused the shortage of flour and fuel needed for the bakeries to operate.
The United Nations World Food Programme reported that all bakeries in Gaza have ceased operations due to the acute shortages of flour and fuel. The WFP emphasized that bread, often the only accessible food for many families, is becoming unattainable, warning that famine is a serious risk looming for the Gazan population.
All the bakeries closed today because of the continuing closure of crossings. All what was stored in our warehouses by the WFP have been consumed completely. So here we are now, without any ingredients there is no way we can work. We used to consume 250 to 300 tons of flour daily, which was less than the actual amount needed for the population. Now there is no choice for us.
The dire humanitarian crisis is further exacerbated by the continuous Israeli military aggression that not only claims the lives of thousands, but also makes survival for 2.2 million Gazans a struggle.
As the blockade endures, the people of Gaza continue to face an increasingly desperate struggle for survival, with starvation looming as a significant threat besides the continuous Israeli aggressive attacks. Ghad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
Over 3 weeks of daily U.S. airstrikes across Yemen have failed to achieve their declared goals of ending the Yemeni blockade against Israeli shipments in the Red Sea. When the Trump administration first launched its military operations, they confidently claimed the strikes would just last a few days. But upon entering the war with Yemen, Trump discovered what many had learned before him. Starting a war in Yemen is easy. Escaping its endless trap is where the real fight begins.
These U.S. airstrikes against innocent Yemenis and against Yemen came with the goal to protect and secure Israel and to stop Yemen from its support for Palestine. They have failed to achieve this main task. The biggest proof for this is that Yemen continues to attack Israel and has even expanded its operations targeting Ben Gurion Airport and forcing it to close, along with attacking more Israeli sites.
And that's because Yemen is constantly developing and manufacturing more advanced weapons at a record speed. According to military experts in Yemen, this accelerated development is baffling American military planners and reshaping battlefield calculations.
Today, Yemen's armed forces have acquired superior military means across the board, weapons that can hit with more precision and hit at greater distances against U.S. targets. This is changing the balance of power in this war in favor of the Yemeni people and the axis of resistance.
As Washington scrambles for answers, Yemen isn't just withstanding the assault, it's rewriting the rules of the battle. According to Yemen's defense minister, the armed forces have made significant progress in developing new weapons, which could soon be used to target additional U.S. positions on both land and sea. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Controversial remarks by the Israeli envoy have sparked outrage among the Palestinian solidarity community in Austria. Addressing members of the Jewish community on March 20, Ambassador David Roed is heard saying there should be a death sentence for 16-year-old teenagers in Gaza, and if Europe invests in rebuilding Gaza, Israel will have to destroy it the next time. Palestine solidarity activists launched a petition to the Austrian government calling for the expulsion of the diplomat.
In the video, he called for the death penalty for minors in Gaza and emphasized that Israel will continue to destroy Gaza. So he not only defended Israel's genocidal strategy, but even endorsed it. This is unacceptable for an international representative, and therefore he must be recalled.
The remarks have been heavily condemned by Jewish anti-Zionist activists in Austria who have recently launched the Vienna Jewish Anti-Zionist Declaration to strengthen Jewish pro-Palestinian voices in Europe. They criticize the close relationship between the Austrian Prime Minister Christian Stocker and the Israeli ambassador.
There is obviously a very close contact between Stocker and the Israeli embassy in a time where there is a genocide in Gaza, which is unacceptable for us, as Jewish anti-Zionist initiatives, we condemn this strongly, and we will continue to pressure our government to stop all ties with Israel.
Some lawyers and solicitors prepared legal steps in response to the comments made by Roed and those in attendance.
From a legal perspective, it's difficult to do anything because the ambassador is immune. The immunity would have to be lifted to prosecute him, and the government won't do that. The real scandal, however, is that the remarks aren't even being investigated by police.
While there is strong condemnation in the international media, Austrian journalists have been silent about the video.
Activists are outraged over the continued alliance between the genocidal regime in Israel and the Austrian government. In a balanced act of disrespect to the Palestinian community, no Palestinian representatives were invited to the annual iftar hosted in the city hall by the mayor of Vienna last Thursday. While no Palestinian representatives were invited, Israeli representatives attended the event and were seated in the first row. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
Over 3 weeks of daily U.S. airstrikes across Yemen have failed to achieve their declared goals of ending the Yemeni blockade against Israeli shipments in the Red Sea. When the Trump administration first launched its military operations, they confidently claimed the strikes would just last a few days. But upon entering the war with Yemen, Trump discovered what many had learned before him. Starting a war in Yemen is easy. Escaping its endless trap is where the real fight begins.
These U.S. airstrikes against innocent Yemenis and against Yemen came with the goal to protect and secure Israel and to stop Yemen from its support for Palestine. They have failed to achieve this main task. The biggest proof for this is that Yemen continues to attack Israel and has even expanded its operations targeting Ben-Gurion Airport and forcing it to close along with attacking more Israeli sites.
And that's because Yemen is constantly developing and manufacturing more advanced weapons at a record speed. According to military experts in Yemen, this accelerated development is baffling American military planners and reshaping battlefield calculations.
Today, Yemen's armed forces have acquired superior military means across the board, weapons that can hit with more precision and hit at greater distances against U.S. targets. This is changing the balance of power in this war in favor of the Yemeni people and the axis of resistance.
As Washington scrambles for answers, Yemen isn't just withstanding the assault, it's rewriting the rules of the battle.
According to Yemen's defense minister, the armed forces have made significant progress in developing new weapons, which could soon be used to target additional U.S. positions on both land and sea. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
A very bleak and somber day in Gaza marking the start of Eid al-Fitr. The scenes here in the central part of the Gaza Strip are not the same as the usual ones. Empty streets, closed shops, and grieving families everywhere. And all that reverberated through is just the echoes of the strikes and artillery shells all around the Strip. Nonetheless, people wore new clothes and adorned their despair-filled streets, holding mere demonstrations of delight and steadfastness, and hoping that their suffering will know a very permanent end.
I hope the war will end, and we will spend the Eid as all other people. I wish to go to swings and play, not to be trapped and suffer like this. I was happy here with this initiative. We had some entertaining activities that brought us happiness. I'll also go to my aunt's home like others.
Despite the endlessly lingering consequences of Israeli genocide in Gaza and the unbearable trauma people have been subjected to during the last 17 months, the Eid comes at a time of grief and unending trauma. The children here in Deir al-Balah, who are internally displaced from their homes, have finally found out a glimmer of peace and joy to vent their pain, and their hope and resilience have never changed. Abu Bakr Abid, Deir al-Balah, Central Gaza, Occupied Palestine.
The Constitutional Declaration was expected to lay the foundation for a democratic transition that represents all Syrians. Instead, it centralized power in the hands of Jolani, granting him absolute control over government appointments, including ministers, third of the parliament, and a committee that will appoint the rest, while restricting any oversight on his authority.
The declaration contradicts the aspirations of Syrians for democracy, political pluralism, and peaceful power transition. Instead of allowing the people to elect their leaders, it strips them of that right. Even the parliament can neither grant confidence to the government nor hold it accountable.
Critics argue that the declaration lacks true democratic foundations, concentrating authority in a single leader rather than ensuring fair representation for all components of Syrian society. The disappointment appeared in the small number of people celebrating the anniversary of the Syrian revolution, which did not exceed a few hundred.
Unfortunately, the Constitutional Declaration leans away from democracy, placing excessive power in the hands of the president and excluding genuine participation. Worse, it addresses transitional justice selectively, shifting all blame to one side instead of ensuring accountability for all parties.
Beyond legal concerns, recent events on the Syrian coast have raised serious fears about the country's future. Armed factions linked to the new regime have been accused of grave human rights violations, including mass killings, acts that some experts warn may amount to crimes of genocide.
What happened in the Syrian coastal region raises serious concerns about the future and the potential for further oppression. While I hope for a solution that satisfies all Syrians, the current situation leaves many in fear of what's to come.
As Syrians grapple with a deepening crisis, the Constitutional Declaration has only added to political discontent and growing fears about the country's future. With power concentrated at the top and violence escalating, hopes for democracy seem more distant than ever. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
In his annual meeting with government officials and foreign ambassadors on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, Iran's leader has called this religious celebration a shared practice that can help unite Muslim nations and as a result offer them protection against the enemy's aggression, such as the ongoing genocide in Gaza. An example of using people's support in a geographically strategic location to unite with the oppressed is Yemen, a nation that has successfully imposed maritime restrictions on the Israeli regime for its genocidal war on Gaza.
The Yemeni nation today has stood up against this aggression as we believe that the true power is with God Almighty. The Yemeni nation's trust is with God and the people's movement. With the honorable people standing by us in the resistance front, God willing, we will defeat the enemy.
In Iran, support for the Palestinian cause came with the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
From the early days of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, supporting Palestine has been one of the ideals of Iran to which the nation, the officials, and leader have remained loyal.
Since the parliament represents the people and they demand support for Palestine, we have taken legal action against the slaughter of Palestinians and the destruction of their land, among other steps.
Our stance is completely clear on the unwavering support for the resistance, which is a fundamental policy based on the ideals of the Islamic Revolution, as Iran's leader reiterated today. While resistance groups act independently, Iran will continue to support them.
Of course, standing up against world powers in solidarity with the oppressed comes at a price, which could be lessened if more Muslim nations joined in, and Eid al-Fitr is a great reminder of that responsibility. For millions of Muslims across the world, Eid al-Fitr presents a fresh start and an opportunity to unite to restore peace and security and Muslim dignity. Maryam Azarchar, Tehran.
Amid relentless Israeli bombardment, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza performed Eid al-Fitr prayers over the rubble of destroyed mosques in displacement shelters and besides the ruins of their homes. The destruction of homes and places of worship has left many Palestinians with nowhere to gather for Eid prayers, further deepening the sense of loss during this sacred time.
This Eid comes at a very depressing time and amid circumstances of death, starvation, and bombing. But the people in Gaza insist on celebrating Eid despite everything, even if it only means performing the Eid prayer.
Reviving the spirit of Eid is an attempt by the people of Gaza to momentarily escape the Israeli resumption of the genocide and the grave humanitarian crisis caused by the ongoing blockade. However, the Israeli occupation insists on staining this day in particular with bloodshed and massacres.
I only came to the Eid prayer to fulfill a religious duty. However, there is no joy or happiness for us. As you can see, the mosque is destroyed, but despite that, they cannot erase our faith from our hearts, and we must pray.
In the 24 hours leading up to the Eid, the Israeli massacre intensified, leaving at least 50 Palestinians killed, the majority of whom were young children playing close to the tents while dressed in minimally available Eid clothing.
This third Eid since the beginning of the genocide concludes with the sounds of the takbirs being mingled with the explosions of the artillery shells falling on the tents and the homes of the people, killing the children and burying their laughter under the rubble of their homes, and making this trip even a wider slaughterhouse at Ibrahim, Gaza City.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
Administrative detainees held without charge or trial now represent more than a third of Palestinian child prisoners. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, Palestinian boys, mostly 15 to 17 years of age, but sometimes as young as 12, have long been targeted by the Zionist regime military for arrest, detention, and prosecution. The Zionist regime is the only regime in the world that automatically and systematically prosecutes children in military courts, with between 500 and 700 Palestinian children detained and prosecuted annually. An increasing number of those children have not been charged with any crime and are held under administrative detention orders. They are part of the largest cohort of Palestinian child administrative detainees in history. Since the Al-Aqsa storm operation on October 7, 2023, Israeli regime forces have seriously escalated their efforts to arrest Palestinians, including children, in large numbers. The most consistent source of prisoner numbers is the Israel Prison Service, which releases headcounts once a quarter, including breakdowns by age and charge, or lack thereof. Human rights groups like the One Defense for Children International, Palestine DCIP, monitor these numbers, document prison conditions, and collect testimony from prisoners. The numbers alone are alarming. For the last year, each time the Israel Prison Service has released headcounts, the number of Palestinian child detainees held in administrative detention was the highest it's ever been. The latest headcount, 112 Palestinian child administrative detainees, as the end of December, is almost five times the number of children held without charge prior to October 7, 2023. Child administrative detainees now represent more than one in three Palestinian child prisoners. Israeli regime forces have rapidly expanded their use of administrative detention to exert control over Palestinian children and families in the occupied West Bank. The Zionist regime authorities enacted harsh restrictions on access to Israeli prison after October 7. Family visits were suspended entirely, and visits from lawyers representing prisoners became extremely difficult, frequently rejected by the Zionist regime authorities. As a result, DCIP's lawyers have primarily collected testimony from children after their release from Israeli custody. All reported that prison conditions have deteriorated significantly, with Israeli prison guards regularly serving rotten food, denying access to toilets and showers, and crowding cells with twice the appropriate number of children. The food is poor quality, uncooked, and insufficient for us as children. It causes me difficulties because I suffer from stomach problems. That's what 16-year-old Jamal, who spoke under a pseudonym for safety reasons, told DCIP, describing the situation inside Ofer prison, adding, there is little comfort in the cell as there are not enough beds for everyone. Some of us are forced to sleep on the floor in shifts. The Zionist regime forces detained Jamal from his home in Arub refugee camp in southern occupied West Bank over the summer, after previously shooting him in the knee with live ammunition. On the date he was detained, he was scheduled to have surgery to repair the injury. Jamal told DCIP, the soldiers exploited my injury, forcing me to sit and kneel on my wounded knee for 5 hours. I was severely beaten if I moved due to the pain, adding that the pressure caused his wound to reopen. Jamal said, they put headphones on my ears and played songs at loud and annoying volume for an hour and a half, knowing that I suffer from weak hearing in my right ear, and this caused me pain in my left ear and head. Israeli regime interrogators are notorious for carrying out acts of physical and psychological cruelty against Palestinian child detainees in order to extract a confession. While international legal standards underscore that children accused of a crime have the right to have a family member and lawyer present with them during interrogation, Palestinian children are afforded neither. Jamal was never presented with charges. Instead, Israeli regime forces detained him pursuant to an administrative detention order. This meant that neither he nor his family had any idea when he would be released, what he was accused of, or even he would be able to go home. Now, as hundreds of Palestinian prisoners are finally being released as part of the true agreement between the fabricated regime of Israel and the resistance movement Hamas, some child prisoners are returning home to their families. The Zionist regime authorities are threatening their families in an effort to stop them from speaking on the media. Yet another effort to isolate children and their families. The Israeli regime military's widespread and expanded use of administrative detention to target Palestinian children amounts to arbitrary detention and has no standing in international law. Until every Palestinian child is released from Israeli regime custody and this practice of targeting children is abolished, we must continue fighting to reunite children with their families.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Do not judge me by the way I look, as you don't have to judge a book by its cover. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Well, this is Arabic English Radio, and I am Asma. I'm very happy and honored to be here with you once more.
And this is Nahid being with you on this episode and talking about the matter of beauty.
Yeah, wealth and beauty. Well, usually when we come
it's
to talk about these
society
things,
these days.
Yeah, unfortunately, that was what I was about to say. Unfortunately, sometimes the world would set some, I don't know, to say weird nonsense criteria, to put some haphazard criteria or rules or instructions for the way people must be. Though, we have to keep in mind that human beings are beautiful because they are unique. Every single individual, like fingerprints. We are fingerprints. We are colors. So we shouldn't be like each other. I don't think there must be a rule, a model that you tell the other people that, okay, you must look like this girl.
Yeah, the fixed
or
feature.
you must exactly look like this model.
I really believe in what you're saying, but sometimes I consider the situation of the youngsters, like teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of society are they seeing? They are seeing the society which is moving towards the beauty and the way that it has been like prescribed. You are beautiful only if you look like the, I don't know, that famous
yeah.
celebrity or the person that is considered
that
as a model.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, sometimes the role model. And in the view of the teenagers and youngsters, I think it's terrifying. The word they are seeing, it's scary.
Yeah. The mode of the era, you know, differs from one era to another era. At our time, maybe things were the same, but in a different manner. You know, this is a problem of it. It's not a thing that happened in our century. Like, imagine in the ancient era, maybe the girls had to pick a sample for beauty. Like, for example, long hair is the utmost way of showing the beauty of a girl at an age.
Yeah, and they were rare samples.
Yeah. Like, I guess it's like this, that each society, each nation, each, I don't know, all the human beings in this world have this tendency to create a role model, a perfect role model according to them, for every single thing. Like, for the way they look, for the way they behave, for the way they interact with other people. And right now, unfortunately, in today's world, the problem is the attention, the inward attention has been ignored, but the outward attention is the thing that's very important. This is the thing that I do not agree.
Yeah, and what is the root here? Whenever I think of this question, that why are we being like this? Why are we having these mindsets in mind? I just find the, like, social standards,
yeah,
they are changing. Mm-hmm. What the society wants from people is changing.
Yeah.
And many of the values are being forgotten.
Exactly. You know, sometimes I think that why do many people in today's world try so hard to keep in shape? Like, I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I would never say that. When it turns into an anxiety, when it turns into agitation in your mind.
Yeah, and it has turned for many people.
Yeah.
They are feeling problems. They are mm-hmm. facing problems. They are being fallen in the traps of those people who say only this shape is acceptable.
Yeah.
And if you are 1 pound weighing more, yeah, you are not acceptable.
Yeah.
You have to go fix your problem.
Yeah.
Go get thin.
You are out of the picture. You do not belong anymore. And this is very sad, I guess, because in this way, we are creating many misfits in society.
Sometimes we are just seeing some pictures of a normal life that is called normal, but it's just some pictures and some videos made in special circumstances. They designed the house this way that we feel this house is the ideal one, so why am I living here?
Yeah, I'm just telling you. See, in past, when we didn't have much more of access to these things, I guess we had much more of content with our own lives, because we thought that life is what I am practicing, is what I am experiencing. We didn't know that something like a perfect life might exist for anyone. Right now, even if they display it, we do not believe that it exists, but I don't know. The society is making it forcefully, the media, not the society, let's say. The media forcefully is making you believe that, yes, there is a perfect life, and some people around you, it's actually a hyper-reality. It's not the reality. And there are some people around you who are experiencing this life, and you are just staying behind.
Yeah, you are being left behind.
Yeah, you're missed out.
Yeah. We have too many perspectives to a human being in Islam. We have piety, we have honesty, we have many features and great samples, like Imam Ali alayhi salam,
mm-hmm.
like Lady Fatima, that we are forgetting.
Yeah,
we are not seeing that picture, which was real, which
we know
is real.
You know why? Because I'm telling you, if you get into society, wherever you go, unfortunately, we're saying that inner values are very important, but what we practice is not exactly in accordance with what we say. Even if in today's world, people talk about internal values such as piety, honesty, whatever that you just mentioned, it's nothing more than a slogan.
Right.
When it comes to practice, what they see is only the criteria that the world has set for them.
The social standards.
Social standards. Let's go for a break, and then we come back to talk more of the reality.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Yes, the reality, unfortunately, sometimes is very hurting, and it's not very pleasant. You cannot even make it a sugar-coated pill to just actually explain it. Well, this is IRB English. Well, this is Youth Station, and this is Asma, and I have Nahid by my side, and we're talking about a Muslim girl. Like, as a Muslim girl, beauty and wealth sometimes gets to be the standard that would define you. But I myself, from the very beginning, from the time when I was a child, I hated it when people started to count the blessings of a person as a way of defining them. I hate this. Like, if you love me, you have to love me for my soul. For the way I am, for the way I think, not for the way I look, not for the way... I don't know, for everything that is related to this materialistic world.
Yeah, and right now that you were talking about the inner values and those Muslim women that are aware of the features that they need to go after, I was just like thinking of those people that I know that are not falling in the traps of those so-called beauty manners, beauty features of this world. And I think those people, more importantly, are powerful. Like, it takes courage and power to make a stand against all these social standards, to go for self-reflection rather than the feedback from other people. And it takes much courage to go for your own way, since in this world, once you just put your steps further towards your own features, towards your own beliefs, you are called odd. You are considered as a person who is just like traditional,
old-fashioned,
and
belonging to centuries before.
Right. And it takes much courage to be different in this world. And those people that I know are those Muslims who believe in the self-reflection, and they have worked on it. They have put thought and effort into changing their ways of life.
You know, I guess the thing that in today's world we have to think more and more of it is this self-worth. What defines your self-worth? Is it your money? Is it the way you look? Both of them could be gone in a blink of an eye. Your wealth, it depends on only one day. Everything could be ruined. Your beauty, it depends on a breath maybe. And then that would be gone. Is my personality defined by what I have in my bank account or what I wear or what I look? Is my color going to define who I am? If I'm a black girl, then I'm not beautiful just because the color of my skin is black.
Yeah, and right, as you mentioned, the definition of beauty and the definition of wealth, these definitions need to be changed.
Yeah, I remember there was a book, it was a literary book in our high school. I loved that part when it came to this quote from a great writer. Let the beauty be in your eyes, not in the things that you look at.
You see a person who is like well advantaged, and then once you want to talk to them, you see the characters and the ugly side.
Many
so
times,
you start questioning
many times,
them.
Yeah, many
is
times
this person as acceptable as I thought before talking to them?
I was too proud to see the truth and prostrate to you until I took the first step. That's when you opened the doors for me. Now, alone, I realize what I was missing by being far from you.
The content is the thing that matters so much. Maybe at the very first step, the thing that would attract your attention is the appearance. But then you are not going to live with that appearance forever. After maybe a specific period of time, you're going to lose attraction. You're going to lose that interest in that appearance. And what is going to matter is the content.
Yeah, the only thing that stays is the character and personality of people.
Exactly.
What we want in the communication and relationship is the character. Be it so beautiful, even if a person is, I don't know, the most beautiful person on earth. But with the personality and character of the person, you cannot get in touch.
Yeah.
You cannot even speak a word with them. So this beauty, I don't think is considered
I
as
guess
a
we
good
have
perspective.
Lived enough to come to this conclusion that
right.
a perfect beauty, a model, a celebrity even, be it whatever that you consider as the best model for human beings, if they only work on their appearance and not on their heart, then I guess it's like a zero. Because all that matters, I guess, is your soul, is how much humanity you contain how much humanity I can find in your content, in your heart. And by the way, hearts are exposed by eyes. And then I guess eyes are windows to the heart. And then you can get the truth of people by looking at their eyes. So sometimes you see some very simple human beings, but then beauty spills out of their eyes. It is as if there is a fountain of beauty coming out of their eyes without them being really beautiful. But you love to sit with them, you love to speak with them, you love to interact with them because they teach you beauty with their behavior. And that's exactly what the Prophet and what Ahlul Bayt alayhi wa sallam have taught us. You shouldn't look at people's color, wealth, appearance, whatever, that has never been in their hand and control. You have to look for their essence, how human they are.
Yeah, and the area that we need to work on to improve is our inner person.
Exactly.
We need to go for our personality betterment.
Self-worth, search for your self-worth, I guess, instead of searching for models, for perfect beauty pageants. You have to forget about all these miss words and I don't know, like how much money they've got. Look how these people are doing with their life. Instead of these things, I guess you have to work with your confidence. You have to work with your self-worth. There was a quote that I read and it was very interesting. And I guess it's very interesting to end up this episode with it. It said, when you get into a room, do not compare yourself with others. Confidence is not to compare yourself with others. Confidence is to see only yourself in that room. The problem, the starting point of all these problems is when you compare yourself with others and forgetting the fact that you are a unique individual and you are worthy in your own being and existence. So this was all.
Yeah, it was all for today's nice episode on the inner and true beauty. Until another time, wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Dozens of Palestinians are killed in the latest Israeli strikes on the Gaza Strip as the regime continues its aggression on the besieged territory. The Yemeni armed forces say they have shot down another US MQ-9 drone over Hodeidah and targeted US warships in the Red Sea with drones and cruise missiles. And the EU chief says the bloc is ready to respond to the latest US tariffs as Washington trading partners slam Trump for imposing new levies. Thank you so much for joining us. More Palestinians are falling victim to Israel's incessant air and artillery strikes in Gaza as the regime's genocidal war rages unabated across the besieged territory. Nearly 50 people were killed in the latest attacks across the Gaza Strip, including four people who lost their lives